public enemy.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. We keep all the archives there, including a previous interview of my next guest. Her name is Sibel Edmonds. She's an American born in Iran and raised there and in Turkey. She was hired as a contract linguist for the FBI after September 11th. In March of 2002, after complaining about mistranslations and worse, she was fired. The Justice Department invoked the rarely used State Secrets Act to prevent the American people from hearing her story. She's back in the news due to the release of a declassified summary of the Department of Justice Inspector General's report on her story. Welcome back to the show, Mrs. Edmonds.
Hello, Scott. Thank you for inviting me back.
Well, it's always great to have you on. And when I interviewed you before, it was in tandem with Dr. Frederick Whitehurst, which was great, but took up a little bit of time we could have spent just telling your story. So I'm glad that I could have a chance to bring you back on the show by yourself here.
Well, thank you.
And I hope that you don't have to go put out any fires in the middle of this interview like my last guest did.
No, absolutely not. My time is yours today.
Okay. So the Inspector General has released an unclassified summary version of his report on your case. What did he say?
Well, as you just mentioned, it's an unclassified version of its executive summary. It's not even declassified or redacted version. The report basically confirmed my major allegations and reports and the core issues, yet it doesn't have most of the substantial stuff and the important things that I was hoping to get. As you know, after 2 years of delay, finally it's out. But at least it is kind of determining the next step, which is, all right, the Congress for the past 2 years has been saying we have to wait for the IG report, we have to wait for the IG report. Well, here it is. What are we going to do next? And they had promised me that they would follow it with investigations, open public investigations and hearings, and that's where we are now.
And you have testified to the U.S. Senate before, right?
Absolutely. 2.5 years ago, I testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and in fact, two senators, a Republican senior senator, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy, they came out 2.5 years ago, and they said that the FBI during unclassified meetings had confirmed basically all my allegations, and Senator Grassley called me as a whistleblower very credible. Well, 2.5 years later, we are basically getting the same answer, the same report from the IG, but that is not what we are after. Okay, we have to go and start addressing these issues and take action.
And because of the State Secrets Act, not even these senators who have become your allies are allowed to tell the whole story.
Well, because they don't want to, Scott. This action was illegal because even ISSO came out and said the retroactive classification of these investigations and these documents, this move by Ashcroft to gag the Congress, is illegal. He had to meet three criteria before being able to retroactively classify this information, and he didn't. So I believe they have the authority, they have the power to override this. And apparently there is not enough pressure from outside, be it through the press or the public, for them to say, you know what, we have to do the right thing.
And do you believe that if the full version of the Inspector General's report was released, that that would create the pressure that's necessary to really open this up?
Absolutely, because then this information will be in the hands of the American people. And they would demand action.
All right, Sibel, hang tight right there. We're about to go out to a break. Everyone, you can sign the petition to get that IG report declassified at justacitizen.com. It's a Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my friends. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and the guest is Sabelle Edmonds. Now, I know that due to your confidentiality agreements with the national government and their invocation of the State Secrets Act against you, that you can't really tell me the whole truth about your story that we would all very much like to know, Mrs. Edmonds. But perhaps for folks who are not that familiar, we can sort of start at the beginning. You can explain how it is that you began to work as a contract employee for the FBI and when, and exactly what was it that got you fired from the FBI?
Well, I started working for the Bureau about a week after September 11, 2001, and I translated intelligence and investigations in three languages, Turkish, Farsi, and Azerbaijani. And during my short tenure with the Bureau, I came across certain issues and cases that I believed I had to report to the higher-ups in the FBI. And they consisted of, let's say, issues within three different broad categories. One had to do with security breaches, serious security breaches. Certain translators who were granted top-secret clearance were intentionally blocking certain intelligence from being translated by stamping them as not pertinent, also removing high-level intelligence out from outside the Bureau and alerting certain targets of investigation. Another one had to do with certain investigations under counterintelligence. Counterintelligence were not being transferred to counterterrorism despite their direct connection and link to certain criminal and terrorist activities against this country, simply because these investigations, counterintelligence investigations, involved certain semi-legit organizations, and according to the agents I worked with and I worked for, the State Department basically asked the Bureau not to transfer these to the counterterrorism and not to investigate it because it would touch upon certain sensitive diplomatic relations and certain sensitive foreign business relations of the United States. That was not right. It shouldn't have been done, considering what we went through in this country on September 11th. And, of course, third had to do with mismanagement and practices, hiring practices within the FBI. So I took these issues all the way up the chain to the higher management, all the way up to Director Mueller by February 2002. And his assistant Dale Watson, and also FBI's OPR office, Office of Professional Responsibility. And it was interesting. Initially, they were asking me not to demand investigations regarding these cases because then it would be highly sensitive and embarrassing for the Bureau. And later, they started retaliating. They forced me to take a polygraph exam, which I took. They came and confiscated my home computers. They wanted to know whether or not I was communicating these issues and these cases outside the Bureau with the Congress. And at that time, I was not, and they could not find anything in my computer. After seeing and witnessing these retaliations, I took the issues to the Congress directly, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. As you know, they have the oversight of the Department of Justice and the FBI, and they have the right to know about these issues, and I gave this information to them inside a SCIF, secured facility, so that none of our intelligence or intelligence gathering methods would be compromised, and also to the Inspector General's office for the Department of Justice itself. And this was done during March 6, 7, 2002. And after I did that, 2 weeks later, they terminated my contract. They fired me. And I then sat and waited patiently for 2 years for the Congress to do their job, to investigate this and to have hearings on these issues, and for the Inspector General's office to issue a report so that the American people will get this information. Meanwhile, I also went through the courts under Freedom of Information Act. I asked them to release certain documents that I was entitled to receive. And I knew what those documents were, but I just wanted to make these documents public. And also under First Amendment right that I have, I had another court case. So basically I tried all the channels possible from our Inspector General's office to our legislative branch, our Congress, and the courts. And by last December, January 2004, I came to this realization that it was not going to happen. This IG report was supposed to be out in fall 2002, and they were not releasing this report. And as you know, and you just mentioned, Attorney General went back and gagged the Congress 2 years after the Congress started their, you know, investigation. And they also blocked all my court proceedings by invoking this rarely invoked so-called state secret privilege and quashed the subpoenas requesting my deposition. And these subpoenas were issued by the 9/11 family members' attorneys. At that point, I decided to take this to the court of public opinion, and that I believed is and was the only channel left not pursued. And that is what I'm doing today. I'm still pursuing the court channels, and finally this IG report came out after being entirely classified initially and then later basically releasing 5% of the report unclassified version. But we still have a long way to go, and I'm so glad you mentioned the website, justacitizen.com, and the petition, because I believe the best way to go about this would be just take it to the people, to the American people, as they demand action, and demand action not as a favor to our request, but as a job that they have to fulfill, the Congress. They're supposed to be representing the people and the best interests of the people. And that's as simple as that. Nothing more, nothing less. It's their job to do that.
Sibel, this Wednesday at noon, according to Congressional Quarterly, you're going to be part of a press conference at the National Press Club with some lawyers from the American Civil Liberties Union. And I wonder, what is the purpose of this press conference, and will it be on C-SPAN?
That will be confirmed about C-SPAN, I believe, by Tuesday morning, this coming Tuesday. But what we did was, as you know, after the state secret privilege was invoked by the Attorney General, ex-Attorney General now, I guess, or still, is he still an Attorney General?
I'm not sure, actually. It's right in the transition phase there.
So the judge in our case, our First Amendment case, did not even really question the government's action. So without even giving us a chance, any hearing, any discovery, we couldn't even depose any witnesses, nothing. What happened was Attorney General and his attorneys went in camera, okay, with this judge, ex parte, and they, whatever they told the judge, without us having anything to add, convinced the judge to come out and say, you know what? The Attorney General is right, and here I'm going to throw out this case without even this case being a case. So we decided to appeal this case. So the ACLU joined our legal team about a few months ago. So last Wednesday, actually January 12th Wednesday, we filed our brief for the state secret case. And in addition to this brief, we brought together several groups and organizations and people such as government watchdog organizations like POGO, Project on Government Oversight, GAP, Government Accountability Project, 9/11 family members groups, and also basically for the ACLU, this amicus brief filed in support of my case demanding that the government just lifting this state secret privilege and letting this case to go through the court, because, after all, we are entitled to have due process.
Okay, well, Sibel, let's talk about national security here for a minute, because, you know, the more cynical side of me can say, oh, well, national security just means if we knew, they'd be in trouble. But then again, you know, you were translating intercepts, and it could be argued, could it not, that these things that they're trying to keep secret really are a threat to national security if everybody knew?
Well, two reasons it's not the case. Number one is they are not even citing ongoing investigations, okay? For example, they are not saying, well, these issues are the ones that we are investigating currently, and it would damage these investigations. And you know why? It's because they are not investigating, and that's what I have been saying for 2.5 years. There are criminal and terrorist-related cases that our government chooses not to investigate hypocritically, because it may affect diplomatic relations. And again, I repeat myself, and I have been doing this for a year now, they cannot have it both ways. On one hand, they are coming to us, to the public, and they are saying, September 11, national security, compromise from your civil liberties and restrict your freedom because you must, because of what you suffered on that day. And they are using this fear factor to do just that. On the other hand, they are not pursuing certain investigations, and they are not bringing about accountability simply because certain sensitive diplomatic or foreign business relations are going to get hurt. The American people, they have the right to know what sensitive diplomatic relations the Attorney General of this country is referring to. And I want to also emphasize the fact that the FBI is not into the business of sensitive diplomatic relations. And when I was working for the agents, special agents, I was told that it was the State Department putting the pressure. And why the State Department is not coming and make it clear what these sensitive diplomatic relations are, and let the public decide whether or not we want to preserve certain foreign business relations over our national security. Look, without even WMD, we are saying let's go to Iraq because it's so important, and because of our national security, at least this is the excuse they are providing, right?
Yep.
And they are willing, and they are willing to put our lives, you know, our boys' lives in danger, and we are losing lives. On the other hand, they are saying we're not going to investigate certain cases because of certain sensitive foreign business relations. Now that can't happen.
All right, we'll be right back. It's the Weekend Interview Show. Folks, welcome back to my Weekend Interview Show. My name is Scott Horton. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. My guest this hour is Sabelle Edmonds, the FBI contract translator turned whistleblower. Her website is justacitizen.com. Now, Sabelle, when we talked before, you said that government officials would go to jail if your story was known in its entirety. Can you tell me if these presumed criminal charges would be related to the problems within the translation department or things that you learned while translating the intercepts themselves?
Things that I learned from certain counterintelligence investigations, and they're not even called investigations. It's just information received under counterintelligence, which involves certain activities, criminal and terrorist-related activities by certain, I refer to them as semi-legit organizations, who are connected here, and they operate here in this country and internationally, and they are still do 3.5 years after 9/11, and their connections to certain individuals here. Now, the connections may be business-wise, or it can be other types of relationship, and I really can't get more specific than that, but they can, they being the Congress, and they being the Inspector General's office, and they being our Department of Justice.
Okay, are we talking about these semi-legit organizations? Are we talking about ties between them and officials in the Bush administration?
One of the things that I have said is I have tried to emphasize the fact that the issues and the activities involved by no means are partisan, okay? And some of these Some of this intelligence goes back as far as 1997, 1998, and as I said, it continues to this date right now as we speak. Therefore, that will be my answer in terms
of... But we are talking about the national government here. We're not just talking about private American citizens.
Well, there may be certain businesses involved. There may be certain groups involved and certain officials involved. It is a pretty wide network.
And again, in the United States of America, home of the First Amendment, you are not allowed to answer my question under penalty of criminal action. Is that right?
Absolutely. You got it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the kind of three subcategories of your complaints about what was going on in the inside the translation department there at the FBI. And I wonder if we can get a little bit more specific. You mentioned, I think, your first category there was about mistranslations and things being deleted on purpose and things not being passed on that should have been passed on, right?
Correct.
And can you say by who?
Well, by individuals. And again, I distinguish between two different groups. One is things that were done purely due to incompetence, okay? They hired certain individuals that did not qualify, they did not pass English tests or the target language test. That aside, certain proven cases involved certain translators who intentionally blocked deceived intelligence, and they intentionally blocked this intelligence from being processed, from getting to the agents in charge of investigations or the analysts in charge of investigations. And one case that the IG says it has been proven by facts, evidence, and other witnesses involves this translator, Melek Ken Dickerson, who actually was granted top secret clearance and started working for the Bureau despite the fact that she used to work for one of these semi-legit organizations under FBI's counterintelligence investigation. Despite the fact that this individual had ongoing relationship with two other targets of other counterterrorism-related investigations, and despite the fact that this individual did not report these issues on her application, job application. Now, forget about the job application. All language specialists have to possess top secret clearance, okay? And in order to grant top secret clearance, the FBI is supposed to conduct thorough background checks. So no matter what you put on your application, this thorough background investigation check that includes your tax records and it includes interviewing your former employers, well, that somehow did not occur with certain translators, including this particular translator.
And they can't really use the excuse that they were just in a hurry to fill the place with translators.
Absolutely,
because
not.
These are the same people who told you, hey, don't translate that. We need it to pile up to show to the Congress that we need more money.
Correct that, because that's how the system works. We fail, we'll go and show that it's due to the shortage of personnel. We go and tell them it's due to not having enough budget, and we get rewarded by having increased budget. You see, it's been working for years. Every time they fail, they just blame it on budget. They blame it on the shortage of personnel, and guess what? They get it.
That's the way it goes with bureaucracy. Now, this woman, Malik Khan Dickerson, and her husband, we talked about this before, they came to your house and tried to recruit you to be involved in the same espionage as them, right?
Correct. And surprisingly, the Inspector General's office in their report are saying that, again, these were supported by other facts, evidence, and by other witnesses. And in fact, FBI did not investigate these espionage cases. Now, not only that...
And still haven't.
Now the FBI is saying they are now starting to investigate it. But look, those targets of investigations, those people involving those criminal activities, most of them left the country as late as February 2002 after I reported these issues.
All right. We'll be back and finish talking about the Dickersons, and I have more questions for you, too. Everybody stay tuned. It's the Bell Edmonds on the Weekend Interview Show.
Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town.
Folks, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and the guest is Sabelle Edmonds. Her website is justacitizen.com. And when we went out to the last break, we were talking about the Dickersons, a husband and wife team. Malik Khan Dickerson, the wife, was a translator with Sabelle Edmonds, and this is one of the reasons that Sabelle Edmonds got fired was for complaining about Mrs. Dickerson obstructing legitimate investigations into an organization that she herself used to work for. And so my question for you, I remember reading something, Sabelle, about wasn't her husband an officer in the Air Force, and didn't they have their own investigation
Correct.
Of this?
And I'm glad that you asked, because now the FBI says they are investigating, they started investigating this case. However, in September 2002, Dickerson's husband and wife left the United States hastily. And they haven't been back. Initially, they went to Belgium, but now nobody knows where they are. And the targets of investigations, the most important top targets, they left the country too. So I don't know what they're going to be really investigating, but let's say they are really investigating this case. The husband works for Department of Defense, Major Douglas Dickerson. And the Department of Defense's Inspector General's Office started investigating Douglas Dickerson in August 2002. 2 weeks later, they hastily closed the investigation per request from the Department of Justice. Now, this individual, Douglas Dickerson, still has his top secret clearance, and he has access to our military secrets and nuclear secrets, okay? This guy's job was he was handling the transactions, weapon procurement from the United States by certain Central Asian countries and certain Middle Eastern countries. I can't name countries. I'm forbidden from naming countries. And he has still top secret clearance. Now, the DOD rule says that even the person you just only share living quarters with, if that person is under any investigation, especially security breaches, your top secret clearance will be put on hold, will be removed, until the investigations are completed. Yet, the Inspector General's Office for Department of Defense hastily closed this investigation per request by the State Department and by the Department of Justice, and this person still has access to our military secrets. Now, how much sense does it make to you?
Well, it depends on what your point of view is. If I was one of the people inside the FBI or the Department of Defense, it might make perfect sense for me to keep covering it up if I feel that the damage of the truth coming out would be even worse for my profession.
But how much longer they are going to keep it? Here, the Inspector General's Office report, as wishy-washy it is, at least is establishing this as a confirmed allegation report, supported by facts, evidence, and other witnesses.
Yes, it does indeed say that. I was rereading through that summary this morning. So I guess right now we're just waiting for the appellate court to finally see the light and let your case proceed then, right?
What? That's the appellate court. As I said, there are three channels we are pursuing. The courts, okay, so we are appealing this, and it's going to be a long process. On the other hand, the real target is the United States Congress, okay? These people should be our representatives, okay? They're supposed to be representing our interests, us, the public, and the country's best interests. They are given this authority, oversight authority, okay? It's their job to fulfill these responsibilities. And they have been sitting on this thing for 2.5 years, Scott. Here's the report. They kept using it as an excuse. We are waiting for the report. Here's the report. Now, do what you promised me that you were going to do. Have open public hearings. And I'm emphasizing open public. Scott, I have been in so many secured rooms. They call these rooms skiffs. Inside the skiff, in the Senate, in the House, I kept providing them with information. I provided them with documents, right? And these skiffs, they are like this black hole. This information has been getting lost. It just goes there and stays there. Now, that's why I started this petition. I want the American people's support, and I don't want anybody else's support. I want their support and their demand through this petition and through their letters to the Congress to put these issues on the stand. I'm willing to go under oath and testify. I am the one who's been begging for this information to be public. I don't have anything to hide. They, our government, our Department of Justice, for 3 years have done nothing but going out of their way, trying to classify everything, blocking everything, gagging everything. Well, somebody here has something to cover up, and that is not me.
You testified for the 9/11 Commission, too, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And what did they say about you in their report?
They said, please refer to footnote number 25 or something. And the footnote number 25 says, please refer to the Inspector General's report. At that time, was entirely classified.
Oh, you gotta love that. And especially, I'm sorry, the humor thing takes me off a track sometimes. But you know, one of the things we talked about the last time I interviewed you was how you had information about this Iranian informant who had warned in, I believe, April of 2001 that there was about to be an Al Qaeda attack with hijacked airliners, and It seems like that at least would be worthy of mention in the 9/11 Commission report, no?
No, and this is despite the fact that the other translators came forward and they corroborated this. And not only that, Chicago Tribune reported this story on June 22nd, 2004, one day before the commission's report came out, and they quoted Director Mueller saying, "Even I was surprised that the 9/11 Commission didn't ask me about this incident because, yes, it did take place." I mean, you have even Director Mueller confirming it publicly, yet this report, this so-called report, didn't have it. I don't know. It's not even in any footnote.
Also, the last time we talked, you mentioned a guy named John Cole and how he had said there were at least 12 current espionage cases inside the translation department alone at the FBI. So who exactly is this guy, John Cole?
John Cole, for 18 years, was the counterintelligence operations manager for the FBI FBI's headquarters, and his cases involved India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. He was overseeing the counterintelligence operations for those three countries. And he reported 12 cases, three of them extremely sensitive and important, regarding translators who were tied directly to the targets of FBI's investigations and who were compromising intercepted intelligence. And not only that, in one case, this one translator actually went to the targets of investigation and informed them about what lines were being wiretapped, etc. And among those targets was an FBI informant who later came to the FBI headquarters and said that this particular translator came and warned everybody not to use certain lines or not to talk on certain lines because they were being wiretapped. They had this, okay? They had.
And nothing was done with this.
No, John Cole, and I have all his documents. He sent these documents to me. John Cole wrote to the Congress. He testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee and Senate Judiciary Committee in 2002. He went to the Inspector General's office, the same Inspector General, Glenn Fine. Guess what? Nothing has happened to those cases. This agency, these people can't even protect themselves, and now they're in charge of protecting us, Scott?
Well, I wouldn't count on it. Doesn't seem like they have the will or the capacity to protect us. They can get revenge for us, though, but protect us, no.
That.
I don't think so. Now, I want to get back in a little bit to this, the semi-legitimate organizations. What exactly are we talking about here? Is this like an NGO, or is this different?
Well, I know to this day, sometimes they talk about certain charity organizations and talking about some of these organizations who have ties to fanatics, but they are not the only ones. There are other types of organizations that have legit fronts. Now, it can be business promotions, it can be cultural promotions, who do carry out criminal and terrorist-related activities. And not because of ideological reasons. And that's something I want to emphasize. These people may not, you know, may be totally against, let's say, fanaticism or this terrorist ideology, but they carry out certain activities simply for monetary reasons, okay? Simply as business transactions. Now, that may involve illegal weapon procurement. That may involve certain narcotics being moved from one spot to another spot and then to another spot. And they may be involved in obtaining certain intelligence and selling it to the highest bidder. And that highest bidder, they don't care who that highest bidder is. It may be some fanatics from certain countries we consider evil, or it may be some other country that we consider communist. It doesn't matter. If the highest bidder is coming up with the money, they provide it to.
And to this date,
we have not heard about these organizations and their involvement, how they maybe facilitated certain money laundering activities or narcotic activities. Guess what? Because that will hurt certain sensitive foreign business relations.
Do you have any information that would tie these groups to the September 11th attacks or Bin Laden's organization?
As I said, through certain activities with money laundering and narcotic and illegal weapon procurement, yes. Not for ideological reasons, but
right.
For monetary reasons.
But
yes.
We're not talking about just, Hamas that doesn't attack the United States. We're talking about the real international terrorist networks that target Americans.
Correct.
I see. What do you think about taking a couple of phone calls, Sybil?
Oh, I would love to.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and give out the phone number if anybody wants to call and ask a question of Sybil Edmonds. The number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And keep in mind, she may not be able to answer your question because the national government will put her in prison if she says things that she's not, quote-unquote, allowed to say. So I guess keep your questions nice and vague for the guests. Again, that number is 1-800-313-9443, and you can be on the phone with Sabelle Edmonds. Now, I want to go back to something that you mentioned kind of in passing about people in the FBI, in the translation unit there, who were not really qualified to be translators in the first place. And I read, I believe it was in your interview that you gave to Christopher DeLisio of BalkanAnalysis.com and of Antiwar.com, where you said that this kid, Kevin Taskinson, or Taskison, could barely even speak English, and they sent him to Guantanamo Bay to translate languages he had never even heard before?
Absolutely, and he was not the only one. There were several, more tens of translators who had gotten to that department, what I call, referred to as through the back doors. For example, one supervisor of the unit, not an agent, just an administrative supervisor, brought in 7-8 family members and put them in positions of translating Arabic documents. Okay, Arabic intelligence. Most of these people did not even speak elementary level English. With Tashkent's case, again, which is a confirmed case both by the Senate and the IG report, and even the FBI itself came out and said, yes, that's the case, was sent to sensitive missions, including Guantanamo Bay. He was stationed there for 2 months. And the reason you send people there is to obtain information from these detainees to prevent certain future attacks, right?
Sure.
Yes, you send unqualified translators there knowingly. It's not that we didn't know he was not qualified. It was that he chose to do so.
And this is evidence that could spring somebody free or could convict them at their sham military tribunal, right?
Absolutely. This is going to be, I mean, the attorneys for these people are going to use this. The prosecutors are going to be using it, because how can you rely on tainted evidence? Now, you just can't, because that either you get the innocent person detained longer than they should be, punished for wrong reasons, for not having any reasons, or you're going to have guilty being sent free. I mean, extremely important, because these translations are being used as evidence, court evidence, intelligence evidence.
I think now it's clear why you still have a gag order on you, right? They don't want to. They don't want some Guantanamo Bay detainee to be able to call you to the witness stand for his defense to say that
Correct.
The translations he's being convicted on are not necessarily credible.
Well, subpoenas are being quashed right and left on my case. And guess what? I have been talking about these issues, and that's the sad part. I've been talking about these issues for 2 years. I've been saying, go and take this stuff, have an independent translator translate it. Do not rely on FBI's performed translations, because you simply can't. They themselves are saying, yes, we are using unqualified people, not for the lack of qualified translators, but simply because we can't even manage our hiring practice. It's not merit-based.
All right.
Get away with it.
The phone number is 1-800-313-9443 if you have a question for Sabelle Edmonds. Let's go ahead and talk to Jesse in California. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a question. Sabelle, do you imagine any time that you will be able to speak or write about all of the things that you're now prevented from doing under a gag order?
Yes, I believe that will happen, or that can happen, and for that I need your support and I need the American people's support. I have given up in terms of Congress and the courts. I'm pursuing it, but it will not happen without pressure. Let's shine the light on them and let them act, and that is not going to occur without you and people like you putting the pressure on the Congress and say, how about doing your job? And once that happens, I want to stand there under oath in the Congress, and there are so many FBI witnesses. So many of these agents are still working for the Bureau, and they are willing to come and testify if they are asked to. So put us there on the stand. Bring in these witnesses and make those documents public. The documents will speak for themselves.
And, Jesse, you can do your part if you go to justacitizen.com, that's Sabelle Edmonds' website, and you can sign the petition to get the full Inspector General report released.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Anybody else? It's 1-800-313-9443. Let's go ahead and talk to Kevin here in Texas.
Hey, Scott, I had to call back in. I'm so happy you took calls with Sybil. Ms. Edmonds, did you have your American citizenship now?
Yes, actually. I was naturalized in 1992 and obtained my citizenship in 1996, and I'm very proud of it.
I'm very proud of you, too. You are such a brave woman, and you're a true American hero. And I want you to know that, you know, the court of public opinion will be on your side more and more, and probably already is more than you know it now. And I know you can't talk about sensitive things, but I'll say something. This was an inside job. It was surely allowed to happen. And my question to you, are you familiar with Zbigniew Brzezinski's grand chessboard and how he writes and states that they needed this sort of event to basically allow them to, you know, follow along the chessboard that they had planned out? And I guess one more comment to you. Are you familiar with Hegelian dialectic of problem, reaction, solution? And I'll leave it at that, and just God bless you, and just keep your head high, and keep the light shining on you, and you'll be safe.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin.
I appreciate that.
Hang tight right there, Sybil. We're about to go out to break, and we'll be right back for you to answer Kevin's questions there. Anybody else? It's 1-800-313-9443, the Weekend Interview Show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com if you want to hear the archives of any of my previous interviews, including a previous interview with this hour's guest, Sybil Edmonds. She is an FBI translator / whistleblower. And wrapping up this interview here with Sybil Edmonds, before we went to the break, the caller, Kevin, had a comment and a couple of questions for you. The first one, his assertion that September 11th was an inside job, or was at least allowed to happen. And then two questions, have you ever read Zbigniew Brzezinski's The Grand Chessboard, and do you are you familiar with the works of Friedrich Hegel?
Yes. The first question, no. I have not read the book by Brzezinski, but yes, I am familiar with Hegel.
And I think his point there was Hegel's dialectic as not just a way of looking at history, but maybe as a way of planning history for the future.
Well, again, I am just one part of a lot of different things. And yeah, as far as this whole issue of 9/11 goes. And my point has been, okay, we have this 9/11 Commission report. We had this joint inquiry by the Senate and House. Yet, currently, there are so many reports that are still remaining entirely classified. There is another report by Department of Justice's Inspector General's Office titled FBI and 9/11 Foreknowledge. You can go and see on their website. That report was completed in July 2004, and it dealt with my case, Colleen Rowley's case, Phoenix Memo, and even more. Yet that report is entirely classified, okay? There's another IG report on CIA. That report is entirely classified. Then there's that 28 pages that the Senator Graham was referring to that dealt with certain foreign countries and their roles. Those 28 pages, even today, after all the campaign by the 9/11 family members, remains classified. If you have done investigation, if you have told the truth, if you have clean conscience, why don't you come out and make this information public? What are you trying to cover up so hard? Going out of your way by gagging the United States Congress, by stopping court procedures. You know, I mean, they are going as far as just disregarding the Constitution completely, total disregard for our system of checks and balances. The separation of powers have disappeared. Why? Why are they trying so hard to hold back, and what are they holding back? Do they come across as really people, clean conscious, honest people? I mean, the notion of the government of people, by the people, for the people. How many Americans today believe in that notion? They would laugh at you. You know why? Because when you look at it, it seems like a separate entity with all this secrecy, okay, and this power within power. removed from the American people.
Uh-huh, and don't forget, it has a $2.5 trillion annual budget, too.
And there you go. And we are supposed to be the ultimate boss, and we are. Listen, paying taxes are not optional, right? We have to pay it. We have to abide by the laws, right?
Or you go to prison.
Correct. Well, they have to abide by their bosses, which ultimately we are the boss.
That's
right. It shouldn't be optional for them either to truly represent the country and its people.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show, Sibel.
Thank you.
I'm glad I can give you an opportunity to help spread that word around a little bit more.
Thank you.
Everybody, please go to justicecitizen.com and sign Sibel Edmonds' petition to have the entire Inspector General's report on her case released to the public. That, again, is justicecitizen.com. We'll be back next week on the Weekend Interview Show with Jude Winiski. And final words, Sibel?
Well, final word is, this is just the beginning. It's a long road, and it's no longer one case and one whistleblower. This is turning to a movement, as you will see this coming Wednesday, the people gathering, the other whistleblowers, government watchdog organizations, 9/11 family members.